using to advance arrows?
You can use a space bar or the arrows.
Great. All right. So look, two of us did it. All right. So thank you all for having me here. It was interesting to adjust to a new community's mores and traditions and things. But I am Chris Elfring. I'm executive director of the National Academy of Sciences Gulf Research Program. Like Chuck, I wanted to start a little bit with who we are, because at times I think it can be very confusing, and naturally so, to figure out who all the actors are in particular activities. The National Academy of Sciences, private nonprofit organization. We are not part of government, 150 years old last year. The term National Academies, you'll often hear that, but that's the National Academy of Engineering, Institute of Medicine, and the National Research Council. That's sort of the generic term. I wanted to, again, being here with a different group, set a little bit of context. The 2010 Deepwater Horizon blowout was a tremendous event. It was the largest marine offshore oil spill in U.S. history. The oil flowed for 87 days, 11 deaths, 17 injuries. We always want to pay respect to the fact that that is the genesis of all this amazing science that we're talking about. So out of that spill have come many, many lawsuits. The lawsuits have, in a way, from a science perspective, a little bit of a silver lining, which is it's allowed us to do some really significant science that is going to benefit long-term both the Gulf and the nation as a whole. I'm not going to explain to you every one of those programs, but I did put them up there just to give you that sense of scale about the different activities that are going on. And then that sets the context for the National Academy of Sciences Gulf Research Program. Our program is being funded out of the criminal settlements, and so monies out of the criminal settlements are going to the National Fish and Wildlife Foundation, which was mentioned earlier. That is $2.5 billion for actual restoration. Also to the North American Wetlands Conservation Fund, $100 million to that organization, Mississippi Flyway kinds of restoration activities. And then to us at the academies, $500 million will be coming to the organization between 2013 and 2018. So the monies arrive over a six-year window. We were talking earlier about trying to understand that we're not yet a $500 million organization. We are really just ramping up. The settlement agreements told us to operate in three areas: oil system safety, human health, and environmental resources. And it told us to conduct activities, three kinds of things: research and development, education and training, and environmental monitoring. Overall, the message you see in what we were given in the settlement agreements is a huge possible terrain to operate within and pretty much do anything you want as long as you can squeeze it into one of these three incredibly broad categories. So not an easy thing to do in terms of to hit the ground running. But the good news was, because we don't hold all that much money to start, it let us take a year and go, we're going to take a deep breath, we're going to think, we're going to talk to people, we're going to learn the landscape, we're going to figure out who's already doing what, we're going to start to understand perceived needs, and how, still within our three realms we're responsible for in three kinds of activities, how do we fit in? So we did run a planning process. It was a lot of meetings. Essentially, we formed a wonderful advisory group. Bernie Goldstein, sitting over here, is one of the members of our advisory group. And their job in that first year was to establish the program foundation. And so we did that through this process of listening and learning. And then as of September 15th, we did release a strategic plan, which I'll show you a little bit more about here in a minute. So mission ties very closely to what the settlement agreements from the courts told us to do: enhance oil system safety and protection of human health and the environment in the Gulf of Mexico and other U.S. outer continental shelf areas. That's an important part of our mission. It is not exclusively the Gulf. And also then improve understanding of the region's interconnecting human, environmental, and energy systems, and foster application of these insights to benefit Gulf communities, ecosystems, and the nation. So we are trying to be a program that focuses on the intersections of things. That is what we've started to use the term cross-boundary, to bring it all together. The goals summarized here: improve safety and environmental protection, improve understanding of the human environment connections and resilience, and advance understanding of the Gulf of Mexico as a dynamic system. And if you do go, and our website will be on the last slide, you can see the full version of those. But again, you see we're pretty much trying to reflect what the courts told us to do, but find a way to do it that's a little bit different. Trying to think if I missed anything on those. I will take a minute to emphasize what we mean by this cross-boundary approach. But we do believe that there are special opportunities to increase understanding in all science at the intersection between disciplines, between the sectors. We like to figure out how to, since energy and the oil industry are part of our portfolio, how do we work more collaboratively? How do we bring people together around some interests that we all know we would benefit from the work? And then also one thing we want to put on the table from us is that we look at the Gulf of Mexico as a region as a whole, not as a series of five states. And so again, when we bring our perspective, we'll try and be doing that as a sort of cross-region activity. A challenge before us right now is that because we didn't know who we were going to be at all when we started, we formed our first advisory group. They had a one-year term of office to write the strategic plan, but now we have to set up a more permanent structure. We have appointed a new advisory board. I am 2 phone calls away from being able to post and announce that group, but some people are really busy and hard to pin down. But we will get this new group up. We will get them running. The new members have to be brought up to speed. There will be some continuity from our original group. Bernie has agreed to continue to serve on our group. 4, I think it is, members of our initial group will continue to serve. But we know that there was some need for us to start doing some concrete things. So we will be announcing very shortly some first funding opportunities, and we're going to move very, very quickly into planning our longer-term program, our more ambitious kinds of activities. I do want to take a minute, too, to give you some. We did hold 3 what we called opportunity analysis workshops as part of our listening and learning, and one of those was on education and training, particularly in the middle skill range of jobs. Another was on environmental monitoring, and our 3rd was on resilience and health. And what we're trying to do in those workshops is talk a little more deeply in a particular area and really start to pull out things we could do. So in this slide, I am giving you example areas related to the health discussions that we had in those 3 workshops, not that only in the workshop about health. And so you can see, again, some themes that have come up in others of the talks, but community resilience. What does that mean? How can you strengthen the science of making places and people more resilient? Improving understanding of health and resilience and the connectivity between environment and health. That's another area that we've talked about. Environmental monitoring is one where we've had a lot of conversations. It's this clear, if you look back at our realms and activities, they're not all terribly consistent, right? We're told to do research and development, education and training, and environmental monitoring. What does that mean? And then again, taking our cross-sector view of things, how do we talk about environmental monitoring in a way that's meaningful in a health context? And so you'll see in a minute when I put up some of our activities that one thing coming down the pike will be trying to look at existing environmental data and figuring out, gee, how could you synthesize that in a meaningful way that maybe brings health data together with environmental data? I want to mention one thing in education and training. Obviously, here we have some collaborative activities as well, but leadership capacity building. If we look at ourselves as a long-term program, 30 years is amazing in science to be able to think. One of the things we'd like to leave behind is a next generation of now young people, but they grow into the leaders of our communities, whether it's our science community, our health community, or the local communities that people live in. So we will be looking for ways to actually develop leadership capacity. Oil system safety is probably a part of our mandate that's a little bit different than anything that Gomri has or that you've heard mentioned here, and it's an interesting challenge for us. how do we bring a science and engineering perspective in to improve safety cultures or process safety? Well, you don't do that alone. You do that through conversations with the people working in that industry. So we have actually started some really good communications to try and figure out how to work together with some of the people who worked and made their whole career and their whole business here in the Gulf. And we will probably focus on how science can help improve safety culture or process safety. But we will also, as I mentioned earlier, be looking, because we have this education and training mandate in particular there. Are there some key points in educational systems where you could integrate safety management into curricula? So those are just some of the examples of the areas of opportunities that I thought you all might be interested in. Funding opportunities for 2014 and to 2016. So these we call our starter activities. We know people wish we were giving away $50 million a year, but we're small at this point in our time. We actually think it's wise to start with some smaller activities to get our systems and processes up and running, but to indicate to the community, who are they? What are they going to be doing? So we have announced that there will be a competition for exploratory grants, kind of seed grants to spark innovative thinking. Things we expect the first grants to be around $100,000 per award. They come in two themes that will be announced here in 2014. Innovative approaches to training middle-skilled workers, and that can be in the oil industry, that can be in health, that can be in environmental restoration. And then the second theme is understanding links between ecosystem services and human well-being. And the themes are better defined, obviously, when you have more than one slide, but they're pretty open-ended because we want people to have a chance to think a little bit differently. Then there are also three additional topics that will be announced in 2015 and awarded in 2016. In early 2015, we do intend to put forward our first call for letters of intent and ultimately proposals in environmental monitoring. And the most common message we heard in all of our community outreach was everybody likes the excitement of gathering new data, but nobody ever gives us a chance to put together meaning out of the data that we already have. So our first awards in environmental monitoring will actually be for integration and synthesis of existing data, bringing things together from different places, bringing them together in new ways. Details on that won't be out until probably the spring of 2015, but those are all in the works. Finally, I do want to put in a plug also. We are starting up two new kinds of fellowships that we believe are part of our capacity building and leadership development efforts, an early career research fellowship and a science policy fellowships. Those also will be announced before the end of this year. And they work somewhat differently. The early career research fellowships are going to be, again, leadership focused. We're trying to find up-and-coming early career people who demonstrate in some way real leadership potential, and these are research grants for them to take and, you know, have their own money and do what they want to do. The science policy fellowships are a little bit different. They are actually modeled on the AAAS fellowships in D.C., where you bring scientists into D.C., you place them throughout government, and they learn how science and policy interact. We're going to do that, but it's Gulf-based. So scientists who want to understand this interface between policy and science, but they'll be placed around the Gulf. And we're very excited about both of those. I am carrying a stack of paper flyers about them. They're also one of the online things. I don't know what you call it, but I put them behind this talk, and you can go download it for yourself. But we're really excited because I think both of those will get us off to a beginning of one of what we think is our more future-oriented activities to build that new cohort of people. So I will end with what we call strategies for lasting benefit. And essentially, all of the input we did probably gave, 40 talks like this one. We went to 5 states and held meetings. We held 4 board meetings. We held virtual meetings of 100 people each 2 or 3 times. Everything we got, we actually used in a thing called concept mapping and tried to say, what does it mean? What are the big picture lessons out of all of this information we got? We came up basically with these, what we call strategies for lasting benefit. The things that we think are the underpinning of our program that will make our program have a unique contribution 30 years from now. That's keeping to our long-term and cross-boundary focus. It's keeping a trying to take the best possible science and using it to understand the Gulf of Mexico as a dynamic system. It's trying to take that science in a translational way and take it toward serving real community needs. It's this focus on synthesis and integration, not just collecting information, but trying to make it meaningful. Coordination and partnerships I didn't speak much about, but we don't think we can or should work alone. There's so much going on, as you saw earlier. We really want to understand how we can take what we're doing. Obviously, we're all talking to one another, so you could say we're communicating, but how do you take that to coordinating, and how do you take that to actually maybe partnering or leveraging what we have into something bigger and even longer lasting? And then, as I did mention, we're very interested in the leadership and capacity building. There's a lot of potential there. We do have a lot of challenges. We have to figure out how to strengthen our focus. We have to figure out how to design activities strategically so they do add up to something bigger than all of the small activities. And we really look forward to working in the health realm and working with all of you. Thank you.
Thank you.